You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. And today it's all about hypnosis. I thought we'd have a good old chat about hypnosis, and what better way to do it than to get a fellow hypnotist on board. So that's what I've done today. I have got Duncan Price. Now, Duncan is a hypnotherapist, a psychotherapist, and a mindset coach. And for over 14 years, he's helped people to achieve their potential. Initially, he was focusing on fears and phobias, stress and confidence. In that time, he has discovered a passion for helping people turn the anxiety around and to learn to succeed with it rather than against it. So that's my guest, Duncan. Hey, Duncan, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, Keith. I'm very well. Thank you for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us. We've heard your bio, but who is Duncan?
Duncan is a nutter. Duncan is, wow. See, now it's a really important question, and a question that I think people don't ask themselves enough. And it's not one static thing. You can spend a long time coming up with just the right answer, only to find that that's defunct and outdated in a week's time. So for me, a person, it's who I am is all about my core values. You know, what's important to me, because everything is in flux, including them, but they have stayed fairly consistent for a much longer time. And to me, the most important things are integrity, trust, and honesty. And then the next thing that comes in line for me personally is helping people. I just have a real love for helping people, and it makes me, it's not entirely a selfless thing, because I love doing it. It makes me feel really good to know that I've made a difference to someone and helped. Yeah.
Nice. That opens up a whole new conversation we can perhaps have another time about altruism. And does altruism actually exist, or is it all about the joy we get from helping others? But we won't.
that would be a whole other episode.
Yeah, we better not set off down that one. So the thing I got from there is we should all ask ourselves every morning, who is Duncan?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, because then I will be on everyone's mind every day, and that suits me well.
There you go. Brilliant. As we said in the introduction, you are a hypnotist. Just before we start talking about hypnosis and all that sort of stuff,
just want to say thanks to this episode's sponsor. It's sponsored by another podcast, Newton's Nuggets. It's run by Paul Newton. You may have come across him before. He's been a guest on a couple of our previous episodes. He's also a brilliant magician, and he runs Mental Theft. Check those out as well. But it's run, Newton's Nuggets is run by Paul Newton and Jesse Lawrence. And it's a great little podcast. Newton's Nuggets delves into different aspects of the life of a modern business owner, providing bite-sized nuggets of advice, information, and the stories behind the people who are experiencing the journey to success. I love the podcast. I've been a guest on it a couple of times. I love many of the guests that they have on there. It's a great little podcast. If you like this podcast, you're really going to like
Newton's Nuggets.
Check it out, newtonsnuggets.com, or you'll find it on iTunes, Spotify, all the best places. Check out Newton's Nuggets, but not before you've listened to the rest of this episode. Now, where were we? Oh, yes.
How did you get into it?
Initially, I met a bloke who was a hypnotherapist, and I thought, what a load of, insert polite word that's suitable for your audience here. The more I spoke to him, he explained what it was really about, and that intrigued me, and it made sense. So I went and did a lot of research, because going back to who Duncan is, Duncan's the kind of person who actually really enjoys doing a lot of research. I'm quite a geek. So I went away and I looked into it, and I read up on it, and I looked into the origins of it and Mesmer and his weird approach, and then Erickson and his stuff. And it made a lot of sense. So I was curious to find out more, went back and spoke to the guy some more. And he said, well, why don't you come and book on to my, to learn self-hypnosis with me? I thought, that sounds even more bonkers, the idea that you can do it to yourself. But of course, as you well know, and I'm sure some of your listeners will already understand, we're all doing it to ourselves every day anyway. It's just how we choose to apply it. And so it was that, it was learning how to do it for me that just blew my mind, if you excuse the expression, and left me hungry to want more. Yeah, I remember laying there on the floor, staring up at this polystyrene ceiling, and I had a silly ponytail back then, and listening to this guy talk and just thinking, he has the best job in the world. He gets to spend his time not helping people, but empowering people to help themselves. That's awesome. And that's when I decided that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it is. I love the way you say, as hypnotists, we're not helping people, we're empowering them to help them help themselves. And that's kind of touches on a theme which will no doubt emerge a few times throughout this. You're right, it is a wonderful thing to do. So I guess first things first, how would you define hypnosis?
Ooh, the simple and short answer to that, I would basically say there's two main elements to self-hypnosis. Mm-hmm. One is a trance-like state and the other is suggestion. Okay. Now, they both work completely effectively in their own ways, completely independently of each other. And they are both completely natural and normal things that we experience on a day-to-day basis. So the trance-like state, examples that I like to use are a journey you make on a regular basis, and you go and make that journey, and before you know, you've already arrived at your destination, you don't remember the journey. That's just one example of a very light trance-like state that we enter into where our subconscious takes over. Another great example is your supermarket queue. There's half a dozen people in front of you and you kind of settle down for the wait because we're British and we love queuing. And then before you know it, can I help, sir? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was somewhere else. Anytime you hear yourself saying, I was somewhere else, I drifted off, they are great examples of a trance-like state.
Or it's like if you're reading a book, you're sat in your room reading a book and you get so engrossed in it, somebody walks in the room and says, hey, would you like a coffee? You're like, whoa! Oh, jeez, yes, sorry, I didn't hear you come in. Again, because you're so engrossed in it. Or I guess for more people these days, you're watching a film or at the cinema and your friend passes the popcorn, you're, whoa, oh, jeez, yes, sorry, I completely forgot where I was. Because you totally
lose track of it. That's a really great point because I don't always explain that element of it because it's not normally so relevant to what I'm explaining. Mm. But yeah, hypnosis can, or that trance-like state doesn't need to be completely zoned out and removed from everything. It can also be completely zoned in and fixated on something.
Exactly.
And it's a very, very similar state of mind in terms of what areas of the brain light up. We won't go into the science of it, right? And so that's the trance. And then the other side is suggestion. And again, we're surrounded by suggestion every day. So this could be something blatant like a billboard that says, buy this burger. I really fancy a McDonald's now. I don't need to tell you that one. Or it could be something slightly more subtle. But of course, it's going to have a different impact depending on how it's phrased, obviously, and the source that it comes from. For example, if it's someone closer to you, when you're growing up, you give authority to a lot of people, obviously your parents, generally teachers, people that you look up to. So their suggestions are going to have way more impact than some bloke you've never met before that you look down on is a bad example, you know what I mean. So obviously there's one person whose suggestions have way more power than anybody else. And that's me. No, and that's that is yourself. So everyone as an individual is constantly making suggestions to themselves, whether they realize it or not. A lot of the time those suggestions, as you'll know, are based on past learning, previous experience, beliefs that you've taken on board from suggestions that have come in constantly from other people and you make them your own. But those suggestions especially when repeated and especially when coming from a source of authority to you, have unlimited, bountiful impact on your beliefs, the way you think, and therefore the results that you can get in various different things. So that's how I'd explain it.
A great way of explaining it. A thing that I often find people think about hypnosis is that it is, you feel zoned out or spaced out or otherworldly, or you kind of have to remind them, no, that's illicit drugs that you're thinking of.
Well, you can achieve that from hypnosis as well.
It's from suggestions. You can put yourself into that state. But hypnosis is, I love the way Esdale described it as an intense state of relaxation, and you're focused on a single thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Hence the mouthful of a name he conjured up for it. Monoideaism, which in a way that was a great description, because it just encapsulates it nicely. But in another way, it was a heck of a mouthful.
But then at the same time, again, it depends on your approach and application. So admittedly, this sort of generally then leads into a monoideaism. Yeah. On from it, but confusional techniques, for example. So for those listening that don't really know, particularly if you're working with someone who's very analytical and tends to have or is presenting with quite an anxious thought process at the time, people will quite often really analyze everything that's happening. And so if you try and get them to focus on just one thing, say my voice, for example, that's all well and good. But while they're focusing on my voice, they're also going to be thinking about whether or not it's working, which is fine. They're going to be questioning lots of different things, questioning whether they're doing it right, whether, all sorts. So actually, a great example was, I had an ex-squaddy that I worked with a while back who was very much like this. And if I had said to him, okay, just listen to this nice relaxing music, picture a beach, and that's not going to work for him, right? He was so not going to be interested in the pink and fluffy stuff. So I used confusional techniques with him. I don't really like the title, but I get where it comes from. And I got him to, the conscious mind can only think about 7 ± 2 things at any one time, which is a weird way of saying between 5 and 9. So I just got him to think about as many different things at once, because then he's got the challenge of actively trying to think about multiple things. So he's no longer feeling like he shouldn't do that and telling himself off when his mind wanders, which it's allowed to do. But it also meant that then he fills his mind with all of these different things, which I'm able to have more influence over, and then less things that he would have influence over. So it gets rid of the doubt, it gets rid of the questioning, because it actually encourages the questioning rather than trying to push it aside, but it fits it within the context and structure of an approach that helps.
Yeah, that brings to mind a great... lovely example I had. A friend of mine, he's a hypnotist, fully qualified, he's a really good hypnotist, he's great, gets great results from people. He has never been able to experience hypnosis for himself, because he is super analytical and always analyzing everything, and no matter what he tries, for want of a better word, for getting into trance, no matter how hypnotists have attempted to help him into trance, as part of his mind is analyzing what's going on. That's why he learned hypnosis, to see if he could use that to go into trance. Now all he finds is he's even more stuff to analyze, because he's analyzing what they're doing and analyzing the results and all this. So we were having a chat, and you're saying, do you think anyone can be hypnotized? Well, if they want to be, anyone can be hypnotized. It's easier for some, harder for others, as we know. He explained all his situation. Said, right, okay, let's give something a go here. So created a confusion or sensory overload or whatever thing for him. Basically, I had him stood up with his eyes closed, gently turning around. I would rock him from side to side a little bit. I had him counting out loud backwards from 1,000 in multiples of 7, mm-hmm. and not just counting back in 7, but each number had to be a different letter of the rainbow, and they had a different different color of the rainbow, and they had to be in order, and it had to be suffixed with the alphabet in reverse. And he was going through all of this and swaying around and kind of touching on the tapping on the arms a little bit from then in when he wasn't expecting, all that sort of stuff. And then you can kind of see the look on the face, the brain is sort of going into overload, because as you say, five to nine things, is a dozen things going on and all these unexpected stuff. And then just put in the station. But any time your brain finds it easier just to go into trance, you can find yourself just going into trance. So I go, ugh. So yeah, and that was, as you say, just completely overloading all, so that the mind has got, because it's so busy. I mean, doing the alphabet in reverse is hard enough anyway, counting back in sevens is hard enough, but add those two together and the numbers of the rainbow and just turning around, and eventually your brain
like
goes,
the rainbows have numbers and letters for you now.
Yeah. Whereas I have to say, I'm incredibly susceptible to hypnosis. I go into trance at the drop of a hat. So you get people.
I remember the first time that I experienced hypnosis, as in structured and deeper mm-hmm. hypnosis. I was laying there and I did the thing that so many people do in my experience, especially because this was in a group setting. And I find this happens more in a group setting, I think, because people are aware that there are other people in the room. And there I was laying down. It was, don't get me wrong, it was very, very relaxing. But I'm thinking, but I'm not actually in a trance. Like, I'm fully aware of everything. I could open my eyes anytime. By the way, none of those things mean you're not in a trance.
Exactly.
and so I'm laying there thinking all of this and thinking, it's, don't get me wrong, it's really lovely, but what have I let myself in for here? Like, really is... And then the hypnotherapist at the time did a floaty hand thing, which I really enjoy. And so you may notice that one hand is heavier than the other and the other one lighter and so on. And then sure enough, my hand got light and it started floating, and I was still thinking, yeah, but I'm choosing to go along with this. And then another part of me was going, well, yeah, of course you're choosing to go along with this, because that's the whole point. Hypnosis isn't about me making you do something. It's about me allowing you to choose to follow it and wanting to. Yes, you can stop at any time. That's always the case. There is never absolutely. A situation where you can't stop. The first step of stopping is to become aware that you're being influenced. And the second step is to just stop.
Yes.
So I always make it clear with any of my clients that are unsure to begin with, I make it very clear to them that if at any time they want to stop, all they need to do is open their eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Doesn't work so well when we do the hypnosis with eyes open, but that comes
well. Oh, now there's a thought. Your eyes are open, and anytime you feel like you want to open your eyes, just go ahead and open them. What? That's a scary thought. You touch on a great thing there. Many people can be fully aware of everything that's going on whilst they're in yeah. hypnosis, and you can be thinking, yeah, but I'm not in hypnosis. I'm choosing to do these things, and you're right. That's you're still in hypnosis. A good example of that. Sorry, go on.
The part that confirmed it for me, if you like, that really made a difference was when we woke up at the end and realised it had been like twice to three times longer than my perception of time, and that made me go. Yes, there's more.
Yeah.
And it's not that I blanked out. It's not that this first time, I have done since, but it's not that I went deep enough. I went into the deeper, like, delta and theta range, for those that know. It's that I was still aware of everything the entire way through, but I was, because I was in that different state, it didn't register in the same way. And so it's a very different experience of the passing of time. There was no one bit that I didn't recall, but at the same time, there's no way that I would have perceived it to have been 40 minutes.
Yeah, that is a very common thing, isn't it? Our perception of time is altered.
It's something I use now a lot. So when I run my self-hypnosis workshops, which I do over a full weekend, one of the things that I do there is the first time I get everyone to experience it just for the fun of it, I time it and I ask them how long they think it was afterwards. And the vast majority of people estimate much, much less than the actual time.
Yeah.
Which is also just a good way of saying, see, told you it worked. For those that are doubting it and still thinking, oh, I was just relaxed.
Yes, absolutely. I was going to bring an example that came to mind of people who are fully aware while they're doing it. I use hypnosis for therapy and coaching and so on, as you do, and I also use it a bit for entertainment, for the stage side and street hypnosis, just because it's good fun.
I did when I was doing my training. It's not something I do now. And one of the reasons why I don't do it now and haven't done for quite some time is because I think it's important for me personally. I'm not saying it's in any greater scheme of things. For me personally, it's important to separate those two because there's already enough misconceptions and fear to a point. And distrust around hypnosis.
Yeah.
And I feel using it at the weekend to make people bark like dogs, not that I really do that one, it's just and other daft things, and then using it to help people. Don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with doing those two things. But for me personally, I want, my focus is absolutely on using it to help and empower people.
Totally,
so it just makes it slightly easier for me to have that slight distance between hypnosis and hypnotherapy, which are still basically the same thing, but with a clear definition in the minds of my clients. That's what I go for with that. But it can be a lot of fun. I remember when I was first training, some of the daft things I did.
I mean, you do touch on a good point there. Some people do have this whole conception of hypnosis based on what they've seen on stage or in Hollywood whatever. And what I always encourage people to realize is in any form of hypnosis, whether it's entertainment or whether it's hypnotherapy, you are the one in charge. Yes, you get people up there doing silly things, but you know what? Because they wanted to.
Yeah.
They wanted to do that. That's why they went up. And look at it this way. The fun that you had there, that you were able to imagine that you were a Martian ambassador addressing the United Federation of Planets, you really believed that while you were doing it and had great fun. Imagine if you bring all of that ability and power over the mind to the problem that you have.
I see the benefit and the power of it. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. And the example I was getting to before it led us onto this. It's all right. It's always fascinating when you get two hypnotists chatting together. Time just seems to have no meaning. One guy wanted a demonstration of stage hypnosis stuff. So I did a quick one with him and got him into a trance and showed him a bottle and basically said, every time you see this bottle, you'll find it's the funniest thing ever. And you'll feel the urge to go into fits of hysterics. It's so funny. And when I hide the bottle, you'll stop. So I did that a couple of times. And he was almost rolling on the floor with laughter every time he saw the bottle. So we finished, brought him round, said, so what did you think of that? He went, yeah, it's all right. I wasn't hypnotized. Okay, fair enough. What makes you say that? Well, I was aware of everything that was going on. Cool, okay. What about when you were laughing at the bottle? He said, oh, I only did it because you told me to laugh. Fair enough. Brought the bottle up, no reaction. Went, you're not laughing at the bottle now. He went, oh, yeah. Because, when we're in hypnosis, the hypnotist isn't making the person do something. They're offering the suggestion, and the person always has the free will to go with the suggestion or not.
A lot of people, myself included, if I hadn't been introduced to hypnosis the way that I was, I'm sure I would be absolutely on board with this as well. But a lot of people don't want to admit to themselves that someone in their perception, someone else has the ability to make them do stuff or whatever it might be. It's easier to go along with it and think that you're doing it because you chose to. And in fact, when I'm talking about stage hypnosis in comparison to hypnotherapy, because obviously the question comes up a lot and it's something that I discuss, one of the explanations that I give is to talk about, so let's imagine you're going to a stage hypnosis show. Step one, everyone who's going there has already decided that they're invested in it working to some extent. Right? Mm-hmm. There's very few people who are going to pay money for a ticket to go and see a show that they don't think is going to work. Unless, and those that do would kind of want to be proved wrong to an extent, because otherwise they just wouldn't bother going to it.
The money, yeah.
So straight away, you've set the right expectation. Step two, you've got this charming man with a bow tie called Keith, who's on posters, and so people see him and they have this perception that, this is the guy that has the power to control me. Yeah. Again, we know that's not true, but that's the perception that's put out. You've then got an audience full of people, and the hypnotist, I may give away some of your tricks here, but it won't stop it working. That's the great thing.
Exactly.
So you've got now a whole audience full of people, most of whom believe that it's going to work, many of whom are already hoping to get pulled up onto the stage, partly to test it, partly because they just like to put on a show, partly because they want to have fun, right? All good thing. And before the hypnotist has even asked for a volunteer, they've normally done something along the lines of, okay, so raise your hands if, but not actually finished the sentence, but they've put their hand up and other people start doing the same because they're more suggestible, because they're already in tune with and following that person on the stage. You can do this in restaurants as well. It's really fun to like pick on a table near you, mimic their body and start to influence them. We won't go there. So straight away, the hypnotist has already identified people who are going to be easier subjects, because you pick easier subjects because it's just you're in public and you're doing a performance. You want to make it as easy as you can for yourself.
Exactly. So, yes.
Yeah. And it's not that some people can and some people can't. It's just that some people are more willing and more ready in that moment. So you go with those people. So the next thing that happens is you get 10 people up on stage and you're going to send 5 of them back to sit back down, for example. And they do that not really because the people that they called up weren't the right people. That may be part of it, but more often than not, it's done because then the 5 people that are left on the stage know that they're the right people. It's definitely going to work on them, otherwise they would have been sent to sit back down as well. And so you've now got a situation where someone absolutely believes that they're the right person to be influenced to do silly things and have fun on a stage, and then in front of an entire crowd full of people and a hypnotist who has authority because it's their show, every single person in that room now is expecting you to dance like a chicken or whatever it is that you've been told to do. What's braver and what's more difficult? Going along with what everyone expects and dancing like a chicken anyway, even if suggestion was completely out of the picture by this point, or turning around and saying no? Because if you do the thing, everyone goes, what a jolly good hypnotist and what a funny character. How great is them to join in? And if you say no, everyone forgets about the hypnotist. In your mind, you're expecting that everyone's then going to look at you and think, well, why?
Yeah, what's wrong with them? What are you playing at?
And people don't want a whole room full of people thinking what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
So that example that I use there does a couple of things. One, it highlights one element of why stage hypnosis is different from hypnotherapy and what it's all about. But it also highlights just how powerful suggestion can be without it needing to be an actual direct vocal command of me saying to you, you will do this thing. Mm. It's about setting the scene. It's about all of these subtleties coming together to create that moment.
Absolutely.
And that's just as important when we look outside of hypnosis and hypnotherapy at our lives. We're really good at just creating this scene, following those routines, those habits. You know, we know that when we're in that place, we do this thing. We know that when we're in that place, we do this thing. It's so easy to wake up next to the same person and not question it. It's so easy to use this both positively and negatively. For example, if we train ourselves that we only go to bed when we're ready to go to sleep, it's much easier to go to sleep because you subconsciously know that, well, that's what I do when I'm in bed. It would be daft to lay here and watch YouTube videos until 2 a.m. Equally, we can train ourselves to lay in bed and not be able to sleep.
Well,
and
yes.
then scroll through YouTube videos until 2 a.m., you know?
Yes.
But we have the power to make that choice and create the environment around us that's more conducive to whatever success we desire and require.
Absolutely. I think
that went a bit preachy, didn't it?
That's all right. I loved your description of how stage hypnosis works. Can I hire you as my warm-up guy to do all the pre-talk for people? Saves
sounds
me explaining
like fun.
All.
Let's do it.
Yeah. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Because people say, well, how can you make somebody do those silly things on stage? Well, again, one, you're not making them. Two, they're going there. They volunteered because they know what's going to happen. They want to do that. They want to experience that. And I know some stage hypnotists kind of go for the cheap laughs and making them do embarrassing things and people laugh. I don't go for that at all. I always go for the one where people are not laughing at the person. They're laughing with the person at the situation.
Absolutely.
And that way the person is also enjoying it and they're laughing along as well. And they're kind of thinking, hey, I'm making these people laugh and taking them with me. Hey, I like this. And so they relax into it more and you then get into more and more absurd situations. It's never about laughing at the person. It's laughing at the situation. The person is kind of the vehicle to bring the humor out of it.
Agreed. And I think that taps into something that I talk about a lot with my clients. So as you said at the start, I used to focus a lot on confidence and I still do. Mm-hmm. Found a real passion for anxiety. Guess what underlies that? Confidence. And what you're talking about there is a great way of highlighting and pinpointing that actually we are all confident people. There's a part within all of us when the situation's right, and remember we can create the right situation, where we will stand up on stage in front of all of those people and have fun and love getting that feedback of making people laugh. And you know, there are people who are very shy, retiring, and would be scared. I mean, it's a normal human thing to be scared of that kind of environment, that can get up and do that kind of thing. And with hypnosis, you know, people who would say that there's no way that they would get up and dance on a table on stage, and then with hypnosis they'll do way more than that. And it's in the same way that if you give people non-alcoholic beer, they'll do daft things that they wouldn't have done sober. Having something to blame for it, something to hide behind, or some excuse, or ultimately some permission to do the thing that's fun, makes it so much easier to do the thing that's fun. But really, we all have that confidence inside to get up and do the thing that's fun. We just sometimes need, or we teach ourselves that we don't, or pretend and learn that we don't. So something like hypnosis, stage hypnosis, for example, is a great way of going, hey, you know what? Give yourself permission to let yourself have that fun that you really do want to have.
Absolutely. And you're right. The only thing that's stopping us from doing these things is ourselves. Nobody else is stopping us from doing it. You're right. It all comes from within. Here's a question for you, just as we're coming toward the end. We could talk about this for hours, I know, but just before we come to the end, there's lots of misconceptions and myths and so on around hypnosis. What would you say is the biggest myth or misconception that you've encountered?
Well, I would say the biggest myth or misconception would come down to something we've already said, which is the belief that I have the ability or intention to control people. I guess to go into a little more depth on that, it would be that people are already being influenced in their day-to-day life by these suggestions. I'm not creating something new in giving suggestions to somebody. They already are being bombarded by them. Every single person out there has the power and the ability to make a choice on every single suggestion that comes their way. So it's not about me controlling them. What it is, it's about them in their day-to-day lives recognizing and noticing things as suggestions so that they can decide and make an intentional choice of how they're going to react and respond to it internally. So I kind of turned your question around and turned it into a bit of advice for people there. But ultimately, yeah, I would say the biggest misconception is that it's about control. It's not about me controlling you or taking away control. It's actually about me giving you more control to make the choices and decisions that you want to make in life.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and I think the misconception that you covered there is probably the most common one that most hypnotists come across. Isn't it mind control? No, it's not mind control.
Well, it also doesn't involve magnets, and you don't need to look into my eyes.
Yeah, very true. I don't. Oh, I just spent the past half hour gazing into them. Oh, well.
You're welcome to.
A thought just occurred. Having said it's not mind control, in a way it is mind control, but not in the way people think. It's enabling you to have control over your own mind.
Exactly that.
Love that. We've got to wrap up. I know.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Hey, ask anything you like.
So anyone who knows me through sort of networking circles will know that I kind of have a joking tagline, which is I'm Duncan and I love the sound of my own voice, which is so true, easy as it may be.
It's a wonderful voice. It's a wonderful
thank
voice
you very much. And it comes from clients telling me how wonderful my voice is, which is one of the reasons I love it so much. I was speaking with another hypnotherapist. That's right, there's more of us out there. And he asked, so did you, is that your normal voice? Well, yes, this is my normal voice. And did you train yourself to use it differently? I was like, well, no, but at the same time, don't we all, or the majority of us, naturally use our voice differently in different ways? So for example, we all have a telephone voice. I mean, hello, yes, probably not like that. Sorry, I said this was going to be a question. My question for you is, how consciously aware are you and how intentional is it, your use of voice? And do you find that the way that you use your voice within hypnosis is different for stage hypnosis to sort of one-on-one client hypnotherapy?
Great couple of questions there. Great couple of questions. I like this. So taking the first question, how consciously aware am I of the way in which I'm using my voice? I guess if I'm having just a general chilled out chat with mates, probably not. But when in any work involving hypnotherapy or any coaching or any at all, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It is definitely a very, very deliberate use of the voice. And so many different ways in which you can use it and modulate it and so on, as you know. So it's very deliberate choices. How conscious I am of that now, because I've been doing it for so long, much of it is not, because it's kind of, you've been doing it for so long and you get unconscious competence, so you're doing it without thinking. Like when we drive, we start off, think you're right, clutch, blah, 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 and then later on you're thinking, oh, right, I'm here. Brilliant. I did it. That said, I will still find myself from time to time thinking, oh, let's just, so that there is, and there probably all, I imagine there always will be, a blend of conscious and unconscious use of the voice, but all of it stems from a very deliberate consciously knowing this helps my client or whoever to experience the state, more powerfully. And I'd like to think there will always be a conscious element, a conscious awareness of it, because if there's not, then it means I'm kind of just doing it on autopilot, which at that point needs no longer serving people. Yeah. And
simple things like when you start to wake someone up, you change the tone slightly and bring more.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Definitely. That's right. And to the second question, is there a difference between the kind of stage hypnosis voice and hypnotherapy voice? When dealing with the clients or the co-performer, because I call them a co-performer because they're doing it. In fact, at the end, when I just before sending them back into the audience, I always ask everyone, hey, give a big round of applause for the star, your stars of your show, because they're the ones who did all the hard work. I just said, oh, do this, do that. To me, I see hypnosis, it's the same thing. You're using the same tools. It's a different outcome. In therapy, somebody wants to get rid of a phobia or a fear or change behavior. On the stage, somebody wants to entertain the audience for a few minutes and just let themselves go and have fun. So the intention is different, but it's still the same underlying tools. And to that extent, the voice is pretty much the same sort of kind of styles of voice. The only difference will be, I'll also, because you're speaking with the subject and you're also speaking with the audience, there's a deliberately a different voice when you're addressing the audience for a couple of reasons. One, because if you spoke with the audience in the same way as you do with the clients, it kind of makes the energy drops, because with the hypnosis, as you know, you want it to be nice and kind of relaxed. And with the audience, you want them to be having fun and engaged and getting lots of energy. Plus, when you separate it out that way, the more you go through, the easier it becomes. So the audience kind of go, oh, it's a more active voice he's talking to me. It's a more subdued voice. I can just chill out and ignore it for a moment. And the subjects also kind of pick on that. He's talking this soft voice. He's talking to me. I listen. Hey, talking in the much more outgoing voice. I can just switch off. So it also helps to then manage the two. And again, there's a lot of conscious use of the different tonalities and style of voicing in there. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but there we go.
Yeah, it's exactly the answer I was expecting. But it was nice to hear the way that you put it across and the way that you talk about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
When I was training and first just basically playing around with my mates and getting a lot of free drinks in pubs, my approach to the fun hypnosis was a lot more rapid inductions, a lot faster, a lot more direct suggestion or commands. But yeah, other than that, the similarities and parallels are pretty close, aren't they?
Yeah. And you touch on rapid inductions. Yeah, when I'm doing stage hypnosis or street hypnosis, because that's always good fun as well, it will be rapid inductions that I go for a couple of reasons. One, if you're spending 20 minutes relaxing someone into a trance, that makes for a very boring show. And secondly, it also then becomes part of the show. Like, oh, wow, they did that. Of course, as you know, you get the rapid induction and then you have to go straight into the deepness and so on, which people kind of tend not to notice. All they notice is, wow, he shook the hand and they went into trance. or whatever it is. So it then becomes part of the whole theatricality of it. And the audience then kind of react in a way which feeds back to the person on stage. They go, oh, cool, I'm doing this right. Brilliant. Yay. So, and then going back to something you mentioned earlier about the hypnotists, when they're on stage, they'll be doing all these various things to see how suggestible someone is way before they even talk about asking for volunteers. Because somebody said, oh, you're cheating. You're just bringing the best subjects up. Well, yes, of course I am.
Yeah. How is that cheating?
The Bolshoi Ballet pick the best ballet dancers to go on stage. They don't pick random people. Obviously, you're going to pick the best because you want a good show. I'm going to pick the best subjects so that we have the most enjoyment. So yeah, of course you're going to pick the best ones, and you pick the ones who they're more suggestible, so they're going to go with it more easily, so that everybody has an entertaining show.
And I love it when people say, "Oh, I can't be hypnotized." Yes, because it's that strength and that power of mind and belief that they can't be means that they are absolutely right, as much as they are absolutely wrong, because they can choose to use and apply that power to make it work or to stop it from working, but the choice is absolutely theirs. I see my role in that conversation to be to help them to realize what that choice actually is, and that it's their choice to make. And whether they then want to take that choice or not is down to them. They generally tend to go with it.
Yep. And why wouldn't they? Because it gets them what they ultimately want.
And it just feels really nice.
It does, doesn't it? So relaxing. We've got to wrap it up. Obviously, regular listeners here will know loads more episodes. You also do a podcast.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, what kind of things are...
It's called the Mind Affinity Podcast. Really original name. I chose to just use my business name and put podcast at the end. It's
neat trick there, folks.
So it's all about empowering people and helping listeners to empower other people as well. So there's a range of guests from other coaches who talk about their personal journeys. So it's not just another chat with another business owner. There's a lot of podcasts out there like that. They're great, but that's not what I wanted to create. I want to create something that either motivates, inspires, or teaches people something that they can use to improve their well-being and their lives, whether that's on a small level or a big level. So for me, my podcast is all about putting out some real value. That's what it's really all about.
That's the Mind Affinity Podcast, and you can find it in all the usual places where you find all the great podcasts.
Indeed.
Brilliant. So, Duncan, it's been a blast, as always. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. People who want to find out a bit more about you, maybe even get in touch, obviously they can check out the Mind Affinity Podcast. But what's the best way for them to find out more about you, what you do, and maybe even get in touch?
Easiest way to find out is mindaffinity.co.uk. On my website, I've got a contact me section, which has all my other details. It also has links to my podcast and my Facebook group, and all other stuff can be found via my website. Yeah.
Brilliant. Excuse me. And that's mindaffinity.co.uk. So go there, check it out, see what Duncan is all about, see what he's up to. Get all the links to all of his social media and everything else there. As always, in the show notes for this episode, we'll have the link to his site. We'll have the links to his other social media, the link to Mind Affinity Podcast as well. Obviously, you can get all of those from keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Look for the one with Duncan Price. Find all of the details and information there. That's it for now. Duncan, thank you so much for taking some time out to share these experiences with
us. Thanks for having me. It's been great chatting with you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And thank you, dear listener, dear viewer, wherever you're catching us. Remember, like us, subscribe us, leave a comment, rate us, share us with your friends, and come back for future episodes. And until then, I'm going to leave you with Duncan's favorite quote. Man is not disturbed by things, but by the view he takes of them.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.